Morning. Today's daf Meila Yud Zayin. We are on the Mishnah on the very top of Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. Hitztarfus. The fourth paragraph of Meila is dedicated to the topic of Hitztarfus combining. I take two different items, I combine them together. So as long as they are somewhere within the same category of one another, so then they do combine. If they're not in the same category, they don't combine. That's the fourth paragraph of Meila in summation. Okay, but we're not doing summation right now. We're doing the actual perek. So let's continue now. We left the world of Me'ila. Me'ila was the launching pad of this perek, where we talked about combination regarding Me'ila, and that all categories of carbon are going to combine, and not just carbon, but kachim. Right? Kachim is bech is going to combine with kachim bedekabayis in order to affect the din of Me'ila and the iser of Me'ila. That's what we learned in the first Mishnah. And from there going forward, there was one more Mishnah that talked about the issue of Me'ila that was on Tezvav Amud Beis. But after that, the next Mishnayos and all subsequent Mishnayos in the Perek are going to be talking about Hitztarfus on different topics. We talked about Hitztarfus as it relates to combining various Truma items, Truma, Chala, Bikurim. So they're all going to combine in order to get to a requisite Shear. The Mishnah talked about, the next Mishnah spoke about Nevela being Mitzarev Zuim Zu and Shratzim being Mitzarev Zuim Zu. And now as we are up to our Mishnah, so we're now going to be talking about the following. The blood of a sheretz. Blood of a sheretz is going to be considered part and parcel of the sheretz itself. Now, if you think about it, it's a chiddush. When you're talking about nevela, right, the carcass of an animal that was not properly shechted, so the basar ha-nevela is going to give off tumma. Tumma's nevela. What about the blood? So the blood, no. In other words, the blood and the basar are not one and the same. And so the dam of a nevela is not going to be a source of tumma. That's not true when it comes to sheretz. When it comes to sheretz, the blood of the sheretz is considered part and parcel of the sheretz. Now remember, like we said yesterday, there are only 8 shvatim that are going to give off tumah after they're dead. The Torah enumerates them. I already pointed out yesterday, we are challenged nowadays, and for some time already, in terms of properly identifying which one are the 8. On top of that, we're not careful about tumah in general. So for us, this is Torah lishma. We're learning this simply because it's part and parcel of the corpus of Torah, but Lamaisa, practically speaking, admittedly, it does not have practical applications in our lives. But nevertheless, so the sheretz, these 8 sheretzim are going to give off tumma. What we're learning together now in our Mishnah is that the blood of the sheretz is considered the body of the sheretz. And so therefore, if I have a little bit of blood and a little bit of the actual sheretz remains, so they will combine in order to get to the shear. What is the shear tumma when it comes to sheretzim? Adasha. It's the size of a lentil. So that means so the shear itself is already really small. The point our Mishnah is about to make is that if I have a little bit of blood, less than a dasha, and a little bit of flesh of sheretz, less than a dasha, and it's coming from any one of the 8 sheretzim, and I put them together, so it's going to be mitzarif in order to create tumma. That's the point of our Mishnah. Let's see it inside. Dama sheretz va'abasa mitzarfim zem zem. So if I have the blood of the sheretz together with the meat of the sheretz, they're going to combine one with another in order to get to the total shear of an adasha. Good. Now, from this point going forward, the Mishnah wants to give us some broad rules regarding Hitztarfus when it comes to Tumah. When things are going to combine and when they're not going to combine. Klal Amar Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Yeshua says, here's a general rule that we can take with us. Kol Shetumas V'Shiro Shavin Mitztarfin. If the degree of Tumah and the amount of Tumah of 2 different items are a match, so then they would combine. So what do I need in order to create Hitztarfus in combination? So I need degree of tumah, that's the tumaso, and I also need amount of tumah. I'm just going to go over the general rules, and then we'll plug in examples in just a moment. Tumaso velo shiuro, if let's say the degree of tumah is the same, but the amount are different, not a match. Shiro velo tumaso, if the shear is the same, but the degree of tumah is not the same, not a match. And lo tumasa v'lo shiuro, now this last part of the Mishnah is kind of obvious now, because if I'm missing either factor, it won't be a match. If I'm missing both factors, then of course, for sure, it won't be a match. Lo tumasa v'lo shiuro, a mitzarfin. In any one of these cases, so it's not going to be a mitzarfin, it's not going to combine. Okay, so the rule of Rabbi Yeshua is that for items of tumah to come together, to coalesce together in order to create a shear, so there has to be a match in terms of degree of tumah and the amount of tumah. Okay, so in the abstract, sounds wonderful. What does all this mean practically? So, here Rashi, or the Mefaresh, goes step by step through the Mishnah and gives examples of each one of them. So you can see it inside. I'm going to read it inside. Tumasa v'lo shiuro. So the Rashi writes, Kigon. Sheretz and Nevela. So let's say I have together Sheretz and Nevela. Sheretz is mitame for, what is the degree of tumah of a Sheretz? Degree of tumah. Now, it's interesting. We're not talking about method of communication. Because means of communication, Sheretz, of course, is only mitame b'maga. Nevelas mitame b'maga v'masa. So that's not really going to be our focus. Our focus is going to be on length of tumah, right? The duration of tumah. Here, it's a match. You come into contact with the sheretz, with the remains of any one of the Shmona Shratzim, so you're tamei today, meaning you're tovah in the mikvah today, and you'll experience Erev Shemesh, and you're good. So it's a one-day tumah. Nevela, same story. You're tovah in the mikvah today, you wait till Erev Shemesh, and you're tahor. So it's a one-day tumah. So when we're talking about degree of tumah, what we really mean is the length of tumah that you're going to experience. So when I have sheretz and nevela, the tumasim shavim, so the tumah shaveh, the degree of tumah is the same. However, I'm sorry, dishneim havyan tumas erev, velo shi'uro. But here's where they depart from one another. The amount is different. The nevela shir tumas bechazayis v'sheretz bechadasha. Because how much nevela do you need in order to create tumah? A kazayis. And how much sheretz do you need in order to become tame? An adasha. So the amount is different. So again, so that's an example of tumas velo shi'uro. Next rashi, velo tumas kagon. Nevela umes. So let's say I were to combine remains of an animal and remains of a human. So tavayim metamim bichazayis. Mes havia tumaso zayin, but nevela lo havia ella tumas erev. So in terms of amount, it's a match. How much human remains do you need in order to affect tuma? One kazayis. How much of a nevela? Again, one kazayis. So amount, it's a match. What about degree of tuma? Length of tuma? So here it's not a match. Nevela is only metamiyu for one day. Human remains are metamiyu for 7 days. So that's why it won't match. Lo tumasa velo shiuro, kigon meis v'sheretz. Now, you can already guess what's an example where they don't match on either point. Not on degree of tumah and not even on amount. So let's say I take a little bit of meis and a little bit of sheretz and try to put them together. So here, they don't match on both points. Kigon meis v'sheretz rashi, de sheretz shiuro bechadasha v'tumasa ad ha'erev, Umeis shiur bechazayis v'tumasu shiva. So here now they don't match neither in terms of amount nor in terms of degree of tumah. Okay, those are Rashi's examples of our Mishnah. So that's the rule of Rabbi Yoshua that in terms of tumah it only will combine only when they match in terms of degree of tumah and in terms of amount. Amar Rav Chanan, Amar Rav Ziri, V'chein Amar Rav Yosi, Rabbi Chanina, Hatameyan. When the pasuk when introducing us to this idea that a sheretz is going to be a source of tumah, so the Torah uses the words hatameim. The hey over there is an additional letter, and melamed shehin mitzarfin. And so what it comes to teach us is that they're going to be mitzarf ve'afilu sheretz v'sheretz, sheretz v'dam. Let's go back to the beginning of the Gemara. There's a little bit of a girsa issue over here. And I wasn't sensitive to it. Let me go back. Let me reread from the beginning of the Gemara with a sensitivity to the Girsa issue. It will allow the Gemara to flow a lot better. So let's start again. Amar Chinan, Amar Rav Chanin, Amar Rav Ziri. Now we have the word Vechein. Right. So instead of saying the word Vechein, so let's adjust the Girsa and let's say Bo. Now, what he's saying in that one word is actually a big Chiddush. In our mission, we learned together that Dam and Sheretz are in fact going to combine. What Rabbi Chanin Amarav is trying to do is limit the application of our Mishnah. Yes, it's true, Sheretz and Dam are going to combine, but only when the Dam is coming from this particular Sheretz. If the blood were coming from a different Sheretz, so they don't combine. Now, in terms of explaining this, so you will see, I will struggle over the course of this morning trying to explain why it should be different, whether the blood is coming from this animal or coming from a different animal. If blood is really, by shratzim, if blood is just simply considered part and parcel of the animal, what difference would it make whether it's coming from this one or coming from that one? Certainly if I have meat of one sheretz and meat of another sheretz coming together, combining, so they're going to be mitzarif. We can all understand that really easily. And you think about the rule of Rabbi Yoshua that we learned on our Mishnah, meaning as long as you have match in terms of degree of tumah and an amount, so then it should combine. And really, it's hard to construct an argument in terms of why it should be that when it comes to the blood of a sheretz, it has to come specifically from this sheretz in order for it to combine. But, as you will see over the course of our Gemara, that is the opinion of Rav Chanin Amarav. And so from this point going forward now, we're going to try to explain it, defend it, and make a little bit of a distinction in this halacha. Now, Amar Rav Yosef Rabbi Chanina. So now in the Gemara, this is coming up as a challenge, right? So maybe the better girsa over here is Masiv Rav Yosef Rabbi Chanina. So now he's going to be challenging based on the following. Okay, thank you. Now it reads much better. Hatamein. So the pasuk says Hatamein. That extra hay is an additional letter. Malam Shehim Mitzarfin. So it tells us that it's going to combine. Va'afilu Sheretz v'Sheretz v'Sheretz v'Dam. Be'im Shem Echad. Be'im Shnei Shemos. And the Braisa says that Sheretz and Sheretz are going to combine. Sheretz and Dam are going to combine. And it doesn't matter if it's coming from same Sheretz. Doesn't even matter if it's coming from different Shvatzim. And here the Bryce's point is the following. If I have the blood of one type of sheretz, remember there are eight different types that are going to be a source of tumah. If I have the blood of one sheretz and I have the meat of another sheretz and they're even of two different types, well, they're going to combine. Because again, once, and think, just go back to the Mishnah and think about the rule of Rabbi Yoshua. Once you have that in your head, so then of course they're going to combine. But what the Gemara is now teaching us is that the dam and sheretz will combine even if they're coming from different types of shretzim. Now, once you hear this, now you go back to the rule of Rav Chanan Amarav, who says that dam and sheretz only combine when it's coming from the same sheretz. That's really difficult. That's really difficult. So the Gemara now, with this difficulty, is going to present the following answer. I'm Rav Yosef Lokasha Kam Bekula Kam Bemiksasa. So the distinction the Gemara now is going to make is the following. If the blood is coming from a full sheretz, so then this blood has the status of sheretz, and therefore it will combine with its own type, with a different type of sheretz, meaning it'll combine. If, however, the blood is only coming from a part of a sheretz, so the blood is only going to combine only with itself, only with this particular sheretz, but not with another sheretz. Now, we're making a distinction between kula and miksaso. Do I really understand how, I understand how to say the distinction, but do I understand the actual distinction? It's hard for me to say. Rashi writes over here that has to do with the fact that when the blood comes from a full sheretz, so it's more chashuv, it's more significant. And so therefore, it has a kind of universal feel to it, where it can combine now with any other sheretz, even another type of sheretz. But if it's only coming miksaso, if it's only coming from part of a sheretz, so it's not as chashuv, it's not as significant. Good, that's the way Rashi says it. I admit, I'm limited in my understanding of why that should actually make a difference. But that's the way Rashi says it. I'm presenting it like Rashi. Now the Gemara says, now, look, as far as this distinction is concerned, it's a good distinction. It's a correct distinction. How do I know that? Based on the following halacha. We're learning together now a Mishnah and Oalos. Now, the Mishnah and Oalos obviously deals with human remains. And the Mishnah and Oalos here in the third parak of Oalos is going to teach us an idea of blood of human remains, which is going to give off tumah. Now remember, tumah of a human gives off, it communicates in one of three ways. One is maga, a second is masa, carrying, and a third is ohel, being under the same roof. Now being under the same roof could be like over here. I have the human blood here and I'm here, but we share the same roof. Ohel could also mean that my body is actually above, directly above the blood, under which that also is considered ohel as well. Meaning, my body can serve as the actual ohel. We are discussing such a scenario where you're going to be directly over the blood of human remains, and we're going to be discussing a really unusual scenario. Nishbach ala ritzba, let's say the blood was spilled on the floor, v'haya mekamo ketapris. Now, it happens to be that it's not a level floor, the floor is at an incline. So, iel amiksaso tahor, iel akulo tame. Now, the Mishnah says that if my body is over some of it, so I am tahor. If my body is over all of it, I'm tameh. So here in this Mishnah and Oalos, the Mishnah is clearly making a distinction between some of it versus all of it. Now, what does that mean?
You don't have a shear.
Right. So what does that mean? So my miksaso. So the Gemara now investigates exactly what does that mean. Elam and mixas dam. Now the Gemara suggests, well, maybe you're over some of the blood. So the Gemara says, "V'amar Rabbi Chanina, amar Rabbi." So the Gemara says, well, if you're over some of the blood, and that blood is part of a revius of dam, so then of course you're going to be tummy. How do I know that? Because revius dam shehigis ba tahara. Because let's say we have the following scenario. Let's say I have exactly one revius of human remains, exactly. And what I do is I take an absorbent spoon, right, back then, as is now is the case as well, so they assume that all spoons are porous in nature, and are going to absorb some of the blood. So when I take a spoon and I put it into the blood to stir it, so some of the blood now is going to go into the spoon. And you no longer have the requisite shear of a revius. So you see, Allah Shmamina, I'm sorry. So what do you see from there? So you see from there that when I have some of the blood here, some of the blood in the spoon, it's considered separated from one another. And so therefore, if I put my body over it, I'm not going to become tameh. So you see over here that in order to be tameh, your body has to be over the entirety of the revius of blood. Either, and if that's the case, then you're tameh. And if not, you're not tameh. Even though there may be a full revius in total, but it has to be that your whole body has to be over the entire revius of blood. Okay, so in this Mishnah Noelos, when it's making a distinction between Miksas and Kula, what's that distinction? So the Gemara says, Allah Shmamina, Kan Bikulo, Kan Bimiksaso, Shmamina. So the Gemara says, so well, you see, that we're talking about where human remains comes from, a full corpse. So then that's significant. If human remains is coming, if the blood's coming from a partial corpse, so it's less significant. Meaning exactly the distinction we wanted to make regarding Dam Sheretz, whether it's coming from a full Sheretz, or whether it's coming from a partial sheretz. So the Gemara now, using this mission, Olos, is backing this idea that it really makes a difference whether it's coming from the full or whether it's coming from a partial remains of a sheretz. Okay. From this point going forward now, we are going to be still continue our discussion of blood of a sheretz. We are going to actually be treated to some agadita today. The agadita today is going to be certainly interesting, to say the least. A little bit difficult in terms of just reading and understanding. And also a little bit of a challenge in terms of historically figuring out where this story belongs in Jewish history. Meaning we know that it's going to involve the Rashbi, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. We know Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was a student of Rabbi Akiva. So that puts us somewhere after, either at Churban Bayis Sheni or a little bit after Churban Bayis Sheni. So, and obviously at this point in time, we're talking about the Roman Empire. Nowhere in the Gemara is it going to tell us exactly which empire it is that's making the decrees against us. So it's not totally clear. I've heard some suggest that it has to do with Hanukkah and the time of Hanukkah, but that's really difficult. It's going to be a little bit of a challenge because, it's the Rashbi and he lived well after the Hanukkah incident and the Hanukkah story. Okay. So it's going to be a little bit of a challenge in terms of figuring out historically where we're at, but my best guess is that we're sometime immediately after Churban Bayis Sheni. Well, the story starts even a little bit earlier. Here's where the story begins. Shal Rav Masya ben Charashas, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So it starts with a conversation between Rabbi Masya and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Be'ir Romi. Now, it's in a city. Now, it says Ir Romi. So this is the only place where we're going to actually see that it's Rome. Although you also see that there are brackets around the word Rome, a question of girsa and what the correct girsa is over here. But anyway, how do I know that the blood of a sheretz is going to be a source of tumah? Now remember, in our Mishnah, we already learned this halacha. Good. But as I already pointed out back in the Mishnah, it's a chiddush. Because dam of a nevela is not a source of tumah. Dam of a sheretz is considered a source of tumah. Now how do I know that? So Amalei dam akra, so the Rashbi's answer is v'zelachem atameh. So he says that goes to back to the Psukim and Parsha Shmini and Vizelachem Hatamei. Now exactly how the drasha works, the Gemara is not too particularly clear about. Could be that the hay is extra, could be that all the words are extra. Either way, he darshens it. Amru lo tamidav chakim le ben Yochai. So when the students hear the Rashbi saying this, so they say, oh, you know that Rashbi? Right, they refer to him as Ben Yochai. You know the you know that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? He's really smart. Like I see, he's turned into a tremendous Talmud Chacham. So Amar Lehem. So he says to his students, Talmud Aruch Befiv Shel Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Yossi. So it's kind of hard to say it over, but I'll say it over. He says basically, don't be so impressed with that. Right. In other words, he didn't come up with that on his own. That was not based on his own erudition. But he got that from Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yossi. I know where the source of that drasha is. That was not the Rashbi coming up with that drasha on his own. He got it from Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yossi. And I even know, like, when it was transmitted from Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yossi to the Rashbi. It was under the following circumstance. There was a decree made by the government. And again, my best guess is that this is a Roman government. Shelo yishmos haShabbos, v'shelo yamolos b'nehem, v'yishevalo es nidos. So the three gzeras that were imposed by the government was not to observe Shabbos, not to give circumcision to their sons, and that they should be with their wives while their wives are in Nida. That third one is a little bit challenging to understand, meaning how do you tell the husbands to be with their wives while there's in Nida. Now, it could very well be that the kind of government control that they had back then, maybe that's true. Maybe a simpler way to say it is they just simply, they closed all the mikvahs. Okay, could be that's another way to say it. But in any event, Halach Rabbi Reuven ben Astrobli v'siper kume. So, in terms of repealing all these decrees, so there was round one. Round one involved this Rabbi Reuven, who first and foremost, so he wanted to become almost like a double agent. See, right? And so he hid his Jewish identity to basically get in with the Romans and the Roman Senate and basically now to repeal the decrees. So what does he do? So the first thing he does is he starts to look like a Roman. And he gets a haircut, right? That's the Siper Kumi, right? They had special haircuts back then that were specific to the non-Jews. And so he got such a haircut. The way Rashi describes it, it's no hair in the front. And a long strand of hair in the back. Okay. V'halach v'yashiv imahem. And now that he looked like a Roman, he sat with the Romans. And I guess over the course of time, right, he gained their trust, and he moved up in the ranks. And now I'm just having this mental image of him sitting in the Senate together with the other Romans. Amar lahem. And so now he's making arguments in terms of logical arguments. Why we should repeal all these decrees. Number one, Mishle shall oyev yeani oyev asher. I know it sounds like the son of Tokev. So do we want our enemies to be wealthy or poor? So the answer the other senators would have are obvious. Amrlo yeani. They said, well, of course, we want our enemies to be poor. So Amrlohem imkein lo yasu malacha b'shabbos kedei sheyeanu. So now he makes the following logical argument. Well, you know what? You know how you become poor? Instead of working 7 days a week, work 6 days a week. Oh, okay, fine. So if they're only working 6 days a week, right, by the way, their minds would explode if they saw our work habit, our work practice of only working 5 days a week. Okay. So so instead of working 7 days a week, so have our enemies only work 6 days a week, meaning you told them that they're supposed to work on Shabbos. So he's arguing, no, counterproductive. We don't want them to work on Shabbos because we want them to make less money, right? And all the senators are looking around the room saying, hey, he's right. Amru, so they all said, Tavis. Oh, that's a good argument. Amru Livatel Ubalua. So they repealed the decree of not working on Shabbos. And so now the Jews were allowed to not work on Shabbos, meaning they're allowed to keep Shabbos. Chazva Amru Lahem. And now here comes the second decree and his logical argument to repeal the second decree. Mishayesh Oyev Yachisho Yavri. Do we want our enemies to be sickly or do we want them to be healthy? Amru Lo Yachish. What do you mean? We want our enemies to be weak and sickly. Amar lahem im ken yamolu b'nehem l'shmoni yamim v'yachishu. Okay, good. So these Jews, they want to cut their babies at 8 days old and injure them and harm them. That's great. But in other words, we should encourage that. They're going to be now infirmed, weaker. Like that's a great idea. And so what was the repeat? What was the ban? The ban was they shouldn't do Mila? No, I'm arguing they should do Mila and make them weaker. Amru Tavis. And again, the response of all the senators around the room was, what a great idea. Amar Ubat Luha. So they repeal that second ban as well. Chazav Amar Lahem. Now, on the third ban, Mishyesh Lo Oyev Yarbe O Yitma'it. Now, do we want the Jews to populate or not to populate as much? So Amar Lo Yitma'it. What do you mean? We want our enemies not to populate. Right, Paro, the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, right? They started populating, and then at that point in time, Paro got nervous, right? So we want there to be less Jews. So he says, "Oh, great, you want less Jews? So imkein lo yivalo nidos." So you know, right? I heard that you banned that you told them they have to be with their wives when she's a nida. You know what? If they are not with their wives when there's a nida, so now there is at least 7 days, right? And in practice, almost 2 weeks. In time when the husband's not with the wives, and so that's going to result in less population. Isn't that what we want? So Amru Tavis. And again, all the senators looking around the room saying, that's a great argument. Amar uvat luhu. So they repeal the third ban as well. So with logical arguments, Rav Reuven now is able to go into the Roman Senate and repeal all three bans based on what seems to be pretty good arguments, at least arguments that were well heard within the Roman Senate. Hikirubo. However, right, the story of many double agents. So they smoked him out. And they recognized Shuhu Yehudi, that he was in fact a Jew. Herzirum. So now, even though, by the way, it's so interesting, he gave arguments, and they all loved the arguments, but once he saw that... Exactly. But once they saw who was the one giving the arguments...
How's that third argument logical? If you're with a nida, you're not going to have children. You're going to be...
I understand.
I don't understand that.
Yeah, because they have less.
They, in other words, the simplicity, the simplicity of the argument is that with they're with their wives less, right, it's going to result in less babies. That's all. That's the simplicity of the argument. Okay, I understand that they're with their wives at the time of ovulation, and it doesn't result in less children, results in more children. Ovulation was not part of that. Was not part of the vocabulary. Anyway, so they brought back all the decrees. Okay, so now that was round one. Round one is now officially over. So there was a temporary repeal of all the bans, but once he was smoked out, all the bans came back. Okay, round two. So round two, we need to go back in there, and we need somebody to speak to those Romans and repeal the bans again. So we'll send the Rashbi. So you know miracles happen with the Rashbi, right? We all know this.
They didn't kill him, huh? They didn't kill the person.
Could be they did. Again, the Gemara only gives us like a portion of the story, like little snippets. We do not have many details, right? We're not even given treated to a full daf on this particular incident. So it's hard to say exactly what happened afterwards, what didn't. And you know me, I also like try not to embellish. I just, you know, whatever's presented in front of me, that's, you know, the best I can give over. It's the most I can give over. So next they're going to send is Rashbi, and anyway, miracles happen with the Rashbi. But we can't just simply send one emissary, we have to send two emissaries. Okay, this rule of two emissaries, I don't know the rule, meaning, but I can tell you, though, that it happens all the time. That you need to send two emissaries, you can't just send one. So who's going to be sent? Yeah. So who's going to come together with the Rashbi? Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi. So they nominate Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi. Amalem, Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yossi says, no, you're going to send my son? In other words, okay, so now his fatherly nature comes out, and it makes sense because he is the father of Rabbi Elazar. And he says, V'ilo haya aba chalafta kayim. You know, if my father were alive, so yicholim atem lomar lo, tem ben chala ariga, do you think you would say to my father, if he were alive, hey, you know what, let's go send your son out on a mission, which he may probably die. Like, right, would you say that to my father? And now you're asking my son to go out on a dangerous mission? Like, no. Right, I'm saying no. So, Amar lehem Rabbi Shimon, Ilo haya yochai abai kayim, Yichol matam lamar lo tem michal ariga. So the Rashbi says, you know, if my father were alive, so you make the same argument. Right, you're going to tell my father that we're going to send your son out on this mission to go speak to the Romans in order to repeal the ban, and you think my father would be happy with that? Obviously, he wouldn't be. So the Rashbi says, look, I'm going. So if I'm going to go, so let your son go as well. Amalu Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yossi says the following to the Rashbi. I'm not worried about the Romans. I'm worried about you. Ana zilna dilma anishle Rabbi Shimon dekamistafina. So I'm afraid. And I'm afraid, basically, he says to the Rashbi, none of the Romans, I'm afraid of you. Meaning what's going to happen is that you are going to go with my son en route, and you're going to have a discussion with him, and for whatever reason, you're going to get upset, you're going to get angry, and you're going to curse my son. So it's rather mesmerizing that the father of Rav Elazar was not concerned about the Romans, he was concerned about the Rashbi. Now you remember, the Rashbi came out of the cave, by the way, all right, we all remember, right? He came out of the cave, and he saw people. And what was the crime they were doing? They were working, right? Right, they were working, and he didn't understand that, and he got upset, and they died, and Okay, so I know it's kind of like, you know, mind blowing, but that's exactly Rabbi Yossi says. I'm not worried about them. I'm worried about you. So kabel alei delolli anshei. Now the Rashbi says, okay, look, I'm taking it upon myself as a personal vow that I will not get upset with your son en route, and we're going to go, and it's going to be good. Meaning we'll discuss calmly, and we won't have any blow ups, and I will not be upset with your son. Now the Gemara goes right to the punchline. And the Gemara says, and you know what? Despite the Rashbi's best commitment and best of intentions, it happened. While they were walking, so then the Rashbi was upset with Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yossi, and he cursed him. Even though he said he wasn't going to. And this is exactly what Rabbi Yossi was concerned with. Rabbi Yossi knew what he was talking about, meaning he clearly had enough experience and enough evidence that would indicate that this, in fact, would happen. And v'kachaya. Kishayim ha'achim ha'derech. Now the Gemara fills in the details of what exactly were they talking about, what got the Rashbi so riled up, and he cursed Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yossi. And so here the Gemara gives us the rest of the story. Kishayim ha'achim ha'derech nishal she'ela zubifnehem. So they were walking, and the following came up in conversation. What else do you think they're going to be talking about while they're walking over there to the Roman Senate? Exactly. Perfect. They're going to be talking in Torah. And so, while talking in Torah, so now, right, you imagine that tightrope that you're walking, that you're working with, as you're now discussing Torah with the Rashbi, and you say something that doesn't sit well with him. Just imagine. So, Shela Zubifneim, so the following question comes up. Minayin ladam asher shu tame. How do I know that the blood of Sheretz is going to be a source of tumah? So ikem piv, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi va'amar v'zelachem atame. Now ikem piv, it's such a great expression, not really clear exactly what it means. Tosos writes over here, mihir lish lahashiv. Like Tosos' explanation is that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi, so he spoke up really quickly, meaning maybe even out of turn. Meaning he should have allowed the Rashbi to answer first, but he answered first. Rashi over here gives a different description. He basically muttered under his breath, meaning he knew the answer, and he allowed the Rashbi to answer, but while the Rashbi was opening up his mouth and answering, he like muttered under his breath what he believed was the correct answer. Either way you say it, basically he spoke out of turn, or he spoke disrespectfully in terms of giving the answer. And what was the answer he gave? So, Ikem Piv Rav Elazar Rav Yossi V'amar V'zelachem Atameh. And he's quoting the pasuk from Parsha Shmini of Vezelachem Atameh. And by the way, this takes us all the way back to the beginning. And now we know, where did the Rashbi hear this? That he knew how to darshan the pasukim. So he knew it based on his walk with Rav Elazar Rav Yossi over to the Roman Senate to try to repeal the ban that was once repealed, then unrepealed, and now they're trying to repeal it once again. And so this is why we are here. This is why we are learning this particular story. So Amalei Rabbi Shimon, me'akimas vasecha tanika shetam mechacham ata. So Rabbi Shimon, the Rashbi, looks over at Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi. He says, look, I see you're a big tam mechacham. Al yachzor haben etzal aviv. But my hope is that the son doesn't reunite with his father. Yes. And I know, that is extraordinarily harsh. And it seems to be that for giving an answer that is both correct, and not only that, is repeated later by the Rashbi, meaning the Rashbi liked the answer so much that he used that as his answer, but because he spoke in such a manner of insolence and disrespect, so the Rashbi is going to give such a curse to such an individual. I know, it's hard for us to hear that, but that's the Rashbi. It's just simply part of his persona.
Is that cursing prohibited to do?
You shouldn't have done it. I mean, right. I understand, but again, Rav Yossi was worried that this was going to happen. It happened. Yasa the Kraso ben Tamayon. Now, the story goes on, meaning, okay, as long as we're here, so now let's hear the rest of the incident. Because the Rashbi does, in fact, get to the Roman Senate, and the Rashbi is, in fact, able to repeal the ban. So how did that happen? So Yasa the Kraso ben Tamayon. So a shade comes and visits the Rashbi. Ritzonchem avoy machem. And the shade says to him, would you like me to accompany you and help you? Now, generally speaking, the nature of the shade is that he's a destructive force. And yes, it's a little bit strange that this shade is coming to go ahead and accompany the Rashbi, help the Rashbi. It's
destructive force.
But again, yeah, very good. Right? But again, though, that's exactly why they sent the Rashbi. Meaning it's for this reason. Right? Remember, in the top of the Amud, Melumad Benisim. Miracles happen with the Rashbi. So, given that that was the entire framework of why they sent him, so then this part of the story shouldn't surprise us. So, Bacha Rabbi Shimon Vamar. Now, Rabbi Shimon was really unhappy. Why? Because Mashiv Chasha Beis Abin is Damin La Malach Shalosh Pamim Va'ani Lo Pamachas. You know, the shivcha of our forefather, meaning I'm not even talking about Avram. I'm not even talking about Sarah. I'm talking about Hagar. So Hagar, we just read this right on Rosh Hashanah. So Hagar was met by the Malach not once, not twice, but three different times. Met by a Malach. And the Rashbi says, and who's coming to accompany me? I have a shade. Okay, so the Rashbi now bemoans the fact that this is the Yeridas Adoros, the diminishment of the generations. Yavo Anes Mikol Makom. But the Rashbi says, look, I'll take a miracle from wherever it comes from, and look, this is right now the best that I have to offer. Fine, I'll take your help. So Kadamhu. So what the Shade does is the Shade gets there before the Rashbi and Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Yossi, and Al Bibarte de Kesar. And he now goes and he possesses the body of the daughter of the Kesar. So the daughter of the Kesar now is being possessed by a shade. Okay? And all this is so that now the Rashbi comes, and what do you think is going to happen? Well, you don't have to guess. So Kimata Hasa, the Gemara is going to tell us. Kimata Hasam Amar. So now the daughter right now is in full possession, fully being possessed right now by this demon. And along comes the Rashbi, and he's going to be the answer. And right, and he's going to be our exorcist of the day. Okay. So Kimata Asam. So when he goes there, Amar Ben Tamayon, say Ben Tamayon, say. And so he gives instructions for the shade now to depart the body of the daughter of Caesar, say. The Kevin Dekarulei Nafak Azal. And so he calls them out, and he leaves. So Amar Lahon. So now the Caesar says to the Rashbi, okay, good. Sheilu Komadi Isachon LeMishal. Good, you save my daughter, you have my full attention, and not only that, I'm giving you whatever you want. The Ailina Leganze. So they go now to the treasury of the king, Lishko Koldabau, so that they can take whatever they want from the treasury. So what do you think Rashbi is going to take? Silver, gold? Right. Not interested in any of that. Ashkechuau Igra, he finds the letter, meaning the actual decree. Shaklu v'karuhu, so he takes it and he tears it. V'hainu damer Rebbe Elazar b'Rebbe Yossi, aniri isi b'irami v'havu lai kamatipe damim. And by the way, another postscript to the story, and that is that in Yuma we have the following statement by Rebbe Elazar b'Rebbe Yossi. Right, remember he accompanied the Rashbi, and he says, you know, I was in the Roman city, and do you know what I saw over there? I saw the paroches, and I saw the blood on the paroches. What blood? The blood that was sprinkled by the Seir LaHashem and the Par Kohen Gadol. Right? We know that the Seir LaHashem and the Par Kohen Gadol are sprinkled on the parochis. How exactly was it sprinkled on the parochis? It was subject to a machlokis. And so now, while they were debating this in the Beis Medrash, Rabbi Elazar b'Rebbe Yossi says, I saw it. Right? It's hard to debate something that I saw. And when did he see it? And the Gemara says, it's based on this story, based on this episode. So again, now, in terms of history, right, it absolutely sounds like we're talking about after Churban Bayis Sheni, we're talking about the Roman Empire, right? It seems to be, and we're talking about the Rashbi, so it seems to be that we are post-Churban Bayis Sheni. That really makes the most sense in terms of giving some sort of historical timeline to the story.
So he actually was saved.
It sounds that way. Yeah. Okay. Right. I don't have footnote 11 right now, but I'll take a look. All right. Okay. Right. The Gemara elsewhere gives supplementary information in terms of what exactly happened. Okay. Let's do the next Mishnah. Pigal and Oser are not going to combine with one another because there are two different Isurim. Sheretz v'nevela v'chein anevela basar amei seim and starfin zeim zel atamei afila b'kal shebishneim. And Sheretz and nevela will not combine with one another. Nevela and human remains are not going to combine with one another, not for Tumah, and not even to get to the kal shebishneim, to the more lenient Tumah, meaning they are so categorically different that there is no allowance for any kind of combination. On this halacha regarding pigel and nosar, the Mishnah says they don't combine. The Gemara is going to be commenting on that. Pigel and nosar don't combine, but that's only regarding tumas yadayim. As just a quick explanation, pigel and nosar are disqualifications of a carbon. We've been discussing it a lot lately, right? This is now we're towards the end of Seder Kachim, so we have discussed pigel and nosar extensively in our Masechta, in the previous Masechta, throughout Seder Kachim. They are disqualifications as such, where if you were to eat it, you're going to get a karis penalty. What if you touch it? Are you going to become tame? The answer, of course, is no. It has nothing to do with tuma. It's a disqualification of a karban that is an iser achila. It's not an iser tuma. However, the chachamim were concerned that, you know, pigel nosar, like the kohanim are just not, they're not careful enough with it. You know what would happen if we were to slap a tuma ban on something that was subject to pigel, something subject to nosar? Like, tuma speaks to the kohanim. Kohanim were super concerned about tuma. So that's in fact what the chachamim did. The chachamim put a ban on pigel and nosar, a tuma ban, so that if you touch pigel or if you touch nosar, you're going to become tameh. And that really incentivized the kohanim to be more careful with pigel and more careful with nosar. As such, so this din of tuma by pigel and nosar is a din de rabbanan. What the Gemara now is commenting is that when we say that pigel and nosar don't combine, we mean the tuma of pigel and the tuma of nosar don't combine. And why not? Rashi over here explains, because since it's a din de rabbanan, so now to say that this din de rabbanan are going to combine one with another, that's a gzeira l'gzeira. That's already now a decree on top of another decree, where the first decree is that there's a tuma altogether, and the second decree now is that they're going to combine. That's already too far. That's what does not combine. However, so umidurabanhi ava le'ingin achila, back to our Gemara. But when it comes to the achila mitzarfin, but when it comes to the iser achila itself, which is an iser deraisa, pigel and nosar are actually going to combine, which really is interesting if you think about it, because they're different disqualifications. But yet they're disqualifications of karbanos, and so therefore they're going to combine. How do I know that? The Tanya, the Gemara quotes a braisa. Rabbi Lazar Amar lo yochel ki kodesh hu kol shebekodesh pasul ba'al kasav litein lo saseh al achilaso. It files under the umbrella category of kodesh, and so since it is a disqualification of kodesh, so therefore they combine one with another in order to result in hitzarfus and combination. Let's quickly recap our day today. We start with the Mishnah of Dam Sheretz. Dam Sheretz is going to be considered like the Vassar of the Sheretz, in that Dam and Sheretz are going to combine one with another. Will Dam combine with another Sheretz? The answer is yes. However, the Gemara limits that. That only is if it's coming from a full Sheretz. If it's coming from a partial Sheretz, so it only combines with itself but not with another Sheretz. Then we spent a little bit of time in the beginning of this morning discussing why that should be, the difference between coming from a full sheretz or the blood's coming only from a partial sheretz. Then the Gemara treated us to an episode where they asked the Rashbi, how do I know that the dam of a sheretz is going to be a source of tuma? He quotes the pasuk v'zelachem atamei. Where did the Rashbi learn that from? He learned that while walking together with Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Yossi, in order to repeal a decree made by the Roman government. And we got treated to the entire episode, right? The first round of the repeal, the second round of the repeal, the Rabbi Yossi's reluctance of sending his son together with the Rashbi because he was afraid that the Rashbi would get angry with his son. And of course, v'kachaya, that's exactly what happened. He did get angry. Exactly how was Rashbi able to repeal the ban? So we got treated to many details within the story. The next mission we learned was pigel and nosar. Pigel and nosar don't combine. The Gemara limits that. That's only the tumas yadayim of pigel and nosar that don't combine, but the actual pigel and nosar, in terms of the Yisra Achila, they are in fact going to combine.